These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Call and give us your take and then get off the phone.
Kelger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, what can you say? I mean, it's like you can't question anything that Alex did. It's like questioning Einstein.
Come on, Tommy. Time Warner there. Yes, you can. Alex has his, you know, I mean, his batting average was tremendous. Most everything he did was right, but not everything. Friday was a cluster.
It really was.
Friday was an utter cluster, and he didn't exactly bathe himself in glory the next night when he goes too long with Eddie Rodriguez.
I mean, to me, that was a huge one because they were connected. The reason Eddie Rodriguez ended up starting that game is because you elected to spend Eovaldi the night before. And I again, to me, the Eovaldi thing is debatable. A lot of people say, no, you got to go for it, which I get. I get that. I disagreed with it because I think you're then putting two games in jeopardy instead of one. And if you lose game three, at least you say, well, we got Eovaldi going in game four. We feel good about it. But he chose to go the way he did. Now Rodriguez starts game four. So let me ask you a question. Before the game started, when you found out it was Rodriguez, what to you did you say would constitute a good outing? In other words, you said, well, if Eddie Rodriguez gives
three innings.
Okay, I said four. Four would be huge. If he could give them four innings, they're in good shape. Because then you've still got, because the way he managed everyone else in the bullpen, you say, well, you still got Barnes. You've still got Brazier. You could probably go Kelly an inning.
Sale.
Price. Right? I mean, you're okay. So Eovaldi's out of the mix, but you still get everybody else. And so if you have to get four or five innings out of your bullpen, you're okay. But Eddie Rodriguez can't get boxed in the second. Can't happen. So then Rodriguez goes one, two, three, four, five. He gives you five and you ask for more? Are you kidding me? This to me might have been the dumbest decision he made in the postseason. Because let's rewind. In the division series, Eduardo Rodriguez made an appearance, couldn't get off the mound. The next time he pitched was in a 16-1 game. Okay, Cora said that's it, you're done. 16-1. His first appearance in the Houston series was 8-2.
They buried him.
And then he brought him in to face a lefty in the Houston series and he walked the guy. Okay, he was buried.
Now all of a sudden he's going seven complete in the World Series?
Right.
Or are you trying to get that out of him?
So now in an emergency spot, you say, oh no, I'm gonna let him go. What? What?
Okay, as you point out, though.
Yes, now I lost my mind over that decision. I'm sorry, I lost my mind. And then post-game, Cora was asked about it, and here's what he said.
Yeah, I pushed him too hard. Had Joe ready, I had Barnsley ready, Turner. We felt that we could get a ground ball. That's the inning you're talking about, obviously. I know it was coming. So Turner, tops one, down the line. We walk Machado. We make a great pitch to Bellinger. We don't get the double play. They score one. We felt the matchup was good for us, but you know that matchup is good for us when Eddie's fresh. He's able to get that fastball up. I had Barnsley ready. I was actually kicking myself for a few innings before the comeback.
Looked like you were on the cusp of taking him out after the Muncy strikeout.
So is that enough?
Yeah, we can stop.
Okay,
there.
I mean, he owns it. He owns it.
He did. And so,
but that was the nerd in his ear. Puig doesn't hit lefties. Puig doesn't hit lefties. Puig doesn't hit lefties. So he keeps Rodriguez out there because the nerd tells him, well, look at the matchup. He doesn't hit lefties. So he's got the nerd on what it's like the good angel and the bad in Animal House. He's got the nerd on one shoulder saying the matchup. And then he's got his common sense on the other one saying, I can't push this guy, but he pushes him. And at least he owns it.
Yes. And so that's, you know, at the time I said, see, this is why I like him. I like the fact that he looked at it and said, I screwed up. That was my mistake.
Okay. So there's that. And then there's this. Please, we have to get this. Your thoughts overall as a human being and a sports fan on an athletic contest, even one that will help determine a championship that goes 7 hours and 20 minutes and ends at 3:30 in the morning. Your thoughts on that?
Way too much. I mean, again, I got to about, I think it was between 1 and 2:30 where I just started to lay down and say, I can't do it anymore. It might have been 1:30 and 3. I don't remember. But there was a stage where I just said, I can't do this. I almost said, I'm going home. I'm going to bed.
But you have to because of the job, as did I, because I was on Saturday morning with Gasper.
Murray, stop.
Okay.
We're going to get your thoughts in a second here. I have your thoughts ready to roll.
All right. Okay? Oh, great. Okay.
I have your thoughts ready to roll. It's patently moronic. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. Here's something that stunned me when I read this today. The rating last night for that game last night, was down 20% from the Red Sox clincher in 2013. Last night did a 40-something, 43-something. In 2013, Game 6 against the Cardinals, did a 50-something, did a 55 or something like that. I wrote it down, and now I've lost it. But it was something in the in that range. You were down 21% from 2013, which on the face of it makes no sense, right? I mean, 2013 was a one-off team. They hadn't built anything. They were last place the year before. Like, they were in last place the year before and the year after, and it was just a one-off thing. And that and this team is built to last, it feels like. They've won the division two straight years, and you get to the game clincher, it's down 20%. That's a big-ass drop. They dropped 20% last night from the comparable game in 2013. Why? Why?
I think 2013 was a better story overall for the casual fan.
I don't agree. My theory, this is my theory.
With the attachment of the marathon bombing and everything?
That's, I mean, that's your theory. I'll give you my, you're saturated. You're oversaturated. It's too much. It's too much. After being up 1 o'clock in the morning every single night, and then one where you have to get up and stay up until 3:30 in the morning, you get to the end of this, you're like, it's just too much. It's supply, demand. It's oversaturation. It's too much. It's too much. And people tune it out.
See, game one was also down.
Game one was down. The whole thing, it's just, but all these games, because it takes too long.
I mean, I was surprised that game one was less than 2013. And I initially thought what you thought. And honestly, to a degree, I still do. So I'm going to middle it because I actually think you're both partially right. And this is stupid of me, but in thinking of it, I neglected to put the marathon connection in. And when Murray put it in the email this morning, I went, oh, you know what? I'm with Murray on the casual fan and the marathon.
I mean,
bombing.
That gets you interested in the topic, but it's like, does this get you to watch a baseball game? I mean, it's part of it. I think the number one thing is, it's just too much. It's just too much. There's only so much you can eat. There's only so much you can drink. There's only so much you can consume. There's only so long you can sit in a chair watching baseball. And it's just been too much. There's just way too much, and you can't hang in because you can't hang in. You can't. And I know it, Murray, because you know how I know it, Murray? Because I was listening to you Saturday.
Okay.
Do you want to know? So we've had callers say, I wish you guys were on Saturday. What would it be like to be on Saturday? How do you react to that?
See, I haven't heard this yet.
So Murray's on at 10 a.m., I guess. What?
11.
Okay, you go on. So, which is still, the game had just ended a couple hours before.
Right, that's not much sleep.
So what does it sound like after the Red Sox blow a game like that, in which it takes that long? What does it sound like for a talk show host the next morning? I'm going to start with the theme to Murray and Gasper, because I've never heard it before, and it made me laugh. So I just want you to hear it as well.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Okay, so the theme's good enough as it is, right?
Yes, no, I've heard the theme before. I like it very much.
So this is how Murray begins his show.
What was that, an hour and a half ago that happened? From the Town Fair Tire Studio, it's Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. You should see the looks on the faces of everyone here in this studio. Myself, Chris Gasper, Joe Murray, who's going to be with us throughout the duration of the show, Tim McCone, who's just wrapping up. I think he slept in it. And did you sleep at all, McCone?
Stop. What is that noise?
I'm just disgusted. Because, I hate watched. By the time it got to, I don't know, quarter or two, at that point, I'll tell you, I didn't care who won it. Just end it.
Exactly.
Just end it.
But innings
would end tied, I would flip off my television. Not that I'm not going to get a reaction from the television. I needed to feel better about something. Because I was so angry that interminable game just kept going and going and going and going and going and going.
How did New England feel the next morning? I think this sums it up perfectly.
McCone. Fitting weather.
Keep going.
Fitting weather, really, for this Saturday morning, Chris. Wet, gloomy, miserable. The microcosm of how I, and I'd imagine how many of you feel, if you stayed up through the entirety of that grueling and ultimately soul-crushing 18-inning, 7-hour, and 20-minute marathon last night/this morning. Game 3, World Series, between the Red Sox and the Dodgers. Final, Dodgers 3, Red Sox 2. It ends on Fat Max Muncy's walk-off solo home run. No shortage of second-guessing on both sides, my friend. As of this morning, Ian Kinsler could find himself in a category, along with Bill Buckner, as one of the great Boston gag artists of all time, if this thing goes sideways.
What was that, Murray? Duplicate that.
To use your phrase, Murray, it sounds like a guy taking an angry dump in a rest area.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt at that point.
I mean, I can tell you, I was borderline physically ill by the time that game ended.
No, that's, again.
Yeah, I was. I was like,
what did it feel
God.
Like watching that game, folks? Murray, how'd you feel about it going 7 hours and 20 minutes? Second cut, Jimmy.
That's absurd. That's absurd that went 7 hours and 20 minutes last night, slash this morning. It got to the point, like, this is the gig, and the Red Sox are in it, so I'm going to watch it. But it got to a point, Chris, I was like, no, I'm not going to watch this in the morning and catch up. I spitefully watched it. Around the 2 a.m. spot, I was like, F you. You know what? No, I'll just sit here for spite. I don't care if this goes till 6 and I don't sleep. Because F you in this sport that goes forever. Just ended. And yeah, I'm obviously frustrated too because, you know, I want them to wrap this up and sweep this thing because I do think that they're a better team. Yeah. I had to get a wellness check on you, Maz, once I wrapped up the show, too.
You texted me, didn't you?
No, I called Saturday.
I called you.
No, Murray did. He did. He called me on Saturday. Asked me how he was doing.
Oh, Murray was mad, though.
I'm so mad. Wow. If you're still in bed, I don't blame you. You got perfect sleeping weather. Sleep this one off. You know, but you got a lot to bitch about. A lot of second guessing from Benintendi only having that one at bat, and Ian Kinsler, you want to, you know, throw him off a cliff right now? Completely understandable. Did they pull Rick Porcello too fast? Because you can second guess that one too. Let's have ourselves an old school Red Sox bitch fest, eh, everybody?
That last line I want to keep.
Oh, the calls were great too. People were mad.
They should have been.
That was an old school classic kick to the gut Red Sox loss that you will talk about for decades.
Oh, yeah.
Let's have ourselves an old school Red Sox bitch fest, eh, everybody?
That was a pre-04. Totally. I mean, that loss, that was an absolute kick in the nuts.
And we would be talking about it today. I mean, not that we've spent some time on it. We had to. But it would be the thing if they had not come back on Saturday night's game and then wrap this thing up.
I mean, we talk about Cora again. I mean, Kinsler getting lucky. Cora got lucky, too.
Cora, Kinsler. Oh, man. The most thank. Cora's way second on that list because Cora's done so many things right, you know. But we've been talking about him on Friday. Kinsler, this is a guy. New lease on life. You're off the hook, pal. But where did he go? It's a great point.
He did not play the last two games.
Never saw him in the last two games. And was he in the post game? Did you see a quote from him? Like,
I think they sent him home.
This poor guy.
I did. I felt bad for him.
Oh, no, there was Kinsler sound post game after this. He sounded like
last night.
Oh, yeah, no, nothing.
Yeah, no, after Friday, he talked about it and was despondent. You know, you'll hear some of it coming up. But I'm talking about, like, since that point, I think he disappeared. He went away. He went with Hanley somewhere. Like, he's, poor guy. Because he would have, that was the face of failure.
No question about it. I mean, that was going to be his Buckner moment forever.
But it's so stupid. It's so dumb. And I do feel the same way about triple overtime hockey, but that lasts 3 hours, not seven.
Let's have ourselves an old school Red Sox bitch fest, eh, everybody?
There's no sport in the world that asks you to do that. It is so dumb. You've got seven games to determine the championship after playing 162 in the regular season and two full rounds before. There is no freaking way that any athletic contest should go 7 hours and 20 minutes and end at 3:30 in the morning. I don't care if it's part of a championship series. You have to end it. The most, you know, I know you don't believe this and you don't care, but you don't have the most important sport in the world. The most important sport in the world, soccer, by far the most important sport in the world. When they play their championship for the world, which they only do every 4 years, they play one game, one, not seven, and they don't do it every year. They do it every 4 years. And they play 90 minutes in which they don't take a commercial. 90 minutes. And if they're tied, they say, we'll give you an extra 30. And if you're still tied, if you weenies flopping around out there like Eduardo Nunez, if you guys can't decide this in 90 minutes plus 30 minutes, then we're going to go to kicks and we're all going to go home. And that's the most important game in the world, the most important championship in the world. They do it every 4 years, not every year. And they say we can't go forever. They don't even come close to saying we can go forever. They play about seven innings for their world, the true world championship. You, in a seven-game series, will go 18 innings, 7 hours and 20 minutes, and go to 3:30 in the morning. That is dumb.
I'm glad you brought up Nunez. I want to get to Nunez in that game.
We'll get to all of this stuff right after these words.
Felger and Mez, the Sports Hub. Felger and Mez.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Looking for a hit to tie it. Muncy at second, the 1-1. That's up the middle. It's backhanded. Throw to first is wide. This game is tied. Kinsler threw it wide. It's 2-2. Watch the footing of Kinsler. He slips, and that slip might have had something to do with the throw. He gets his feet off balance, and he tries to come up and make the throw. And unfortunately for Kinsler and the Red Sox, that allowed the tying run to score.
I had the last out in my glove, and we ended up playing however many innings, 19 innings, 18 innings, whatever. You know, I had an opportunity in the game right there, and it didn't happen. So, yeah, it definitely comes back. In that situation, there's nothing to say. I mean, it's a tough play. It's tough to swallow. It's, you know, there's nothing that they can say in that moment that's gonna help make me feel any better. You know, that's up to me. Just move on and try to get ready for the next play as best as possible.
Okay, it's the most thankful man in New England right now, Ian Kinsler. That error is forgotten. At the time, though, wow, that was shaping up to be a doozy.
Was it ever?
One more thing. We're just unpacking everything from the weekend, as I told you. Last night, the World Series, Saturday night, Friday night, lot to get to. One more thing, Maz. How do you feel about Eduardo Nunez? And, well, how do you feel about Eduardo Nunez?
So, look, overall, I like Nunez as a player because I think he's a good bench guy. He plays his ass off. He plays hard. But when he fell into the stands on that pop-up, I watched the play. I don't know how many times over. You can't go in the stands there.
Agreed.
And I don't think he needed to go into the stands there.
Agreed.
I think there was he's a little bit of a drama queen.
And again, that set up the Ian Kinsler play because there was a runner at first, and there was...
Muncy tagged up.
There was one out. So when he spills into the stands, the runner at first tags and goes to second. That set up the Kinsler play.
Right, again. And then so that opened up first base and Puig's up. Now, again, you could say the Red Sox compounded it. Cora shouldn't have pitched to Puig there. Walk him. Austin Barnes is on deck, for crying out loud. That's a layup. So they made a mistake pitching to Puig, and then Kinsler made a mistake. But I just don't think you can let Nunez off the hook. And I know that he was falling all over the place.
Oh, my God, what a flopper. Should be a Celtic.
But you can't go in the stands there. He had plenty of time to stop.
Plenty of time.
You can't go in the stands.
He's got to be aware that the runner tags and now the tying run is in scoring position.
Now, there are some plays where you can't help it. Sometimes you're good just going so fast, so hard. You know, years ago when Jeter did it against the Red Sox, he was sprinting and practically caught the ball in the first row. He had no chance of stopping. I thought Nunez could have stopped, and he didn't, and it cost him.
Okay, we have breaking news, folks, here at the NFL trade deadline.
This is breaking sports news.
Powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We always say, Mike, hit it and ask questions later. But this from Ian Rapoport of NFL Network. According to sources, the New England Patriots are disciplining wide receiver Josh Gordon for tonight's game against the Buffalo Bills because of tardiness. Gordon is expected to be kept off the field for several series, probably a quarter, as they continue to work with and manage him. So again, okay. Josh Gordon is being disciplined for tonight's game.
Okay, good job hitting the button. I just wonder if this ties into their alleged interest in premium wide receivers.
No question.
You know, and if it's more than just a quarter, or I mean, what's the discipline? Being tardy? Well, it's a horrible sign for a guy like him. I don't even need to get into the details there, but it's a bad sign. But the fact that they were allegedly in on premium receivers, including Demaryius Thomas, like no thank you, but. You know, Larry Fitzgerald might be out there. Golden Tate might be out there. I mean, they may be in the market for this guy. When I first heard it, the first thing I thought of, what did Gordon do? I honestly, when I heard this yesterday, I'm like, did Gordon do something? And here you go. Maybe he did.
So maybe that's a break that had happened before the deadline and not after. Like I felt all along, even when they got Gordon, that they should keep looking. You can't rely on this guy. And so if something flared up here and it happened beforehand, good.
Okay, so anyway, there's that. Gordon will be disciplined tonight in the game against Buffalo. The trade deadline is tomorrow. We'll have plenty on this tomorrow. Beadle, we're doing the Patriots pregame show at 5:30 tonight. So Felger and Maz are off at 5:30. The Patriots pregame starts at 5:30. But they're not going to do anything on the game. It's going to be a trade deadline show. So Beadle told me to tell you this out there, that they're going to go into all of this stuff, all of the trade rumors, all the trade possibilities, what the Pats are in on, what they're not in on, what they can do, what they can't do. The Gordon situation is going to play into this. So Beadle and Gasper, I believe, will have that at 5:30 for the Patriots pregame. We're mostly World Series reaction here. Shaughnessy on Nunez. Just back to Nunez here. Shaughnessy wrote, again, on Saturday after that absurd Friday night game, he says, oh, can we pause for a moment and say a few words about Eduardo Nunez? Nooney did not enter game three until the 10th inning, but he seemed to be involved in every play for the rest of the night and was not upright at the end of any of them. Nunez got tangled up with the catcher. He splashed across first base when the Sox went ahead in the top of the 13th. He dove into the stands. He fell on the mound while fielding a pop-up. He says, this man should play soccer. He is baseball's all-time drama king. Nunez was playing third in the 13th when the Sox were one out away. Okay, so true.
Absolutely.
He's not hurt. He's not hurt. Remember, I was listening. Maybe it was your show on the weekend or something, right? When it was announced that Nunez was going to play on Saturday, one of you guys, I can't even remember who said, I can't believe Nunez is playing. I'm screaming at my radio. Why, what's not to believe? He's fine. He's not hurt. He's just flopping around out there like a Celtic. And so, like, what? Don't you get it? Like, I love it, too, because the Sox did over-dramatize it. There was the play where he dove head first into first base, and he's laughing on the ground. But, of course, he makes the trainer come out, and he does his jogging down the first baseline like, yeah, no, I'm okay. You know, he goes through the whole drama thing, and then Cora plays into it after the game and says, you know, he said to me, you know, Skip, I'm not coming out. I'm not coming out. And I told him, well, Nooney, you can't come out. We don't have anybody else. Like, there's no reason for him to come out because he's not hurt. He's not hurt. He wasn't hurt. He wasn't hurt on any of them. He's not hurt.
And so, the one that bothered me the most was going in the stands.
But going into the stands cost
the team.
Cost you the game.
So at least on the other ones, you can say, all right, in the batter's box, when the catcher flipped him over, fine. Whatever, no harm, no foul. Diving into first base, fine. Again, no big deal. If it helped you be safe, great. And even falling on the pitcher's mound, on the pop-up, fine. Whatever, nobody advanced, I don't care. But once you went into the stands, and the way he turned his body, he was positioning himself to fall in the stands.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, he did it on purpose. And that cost him. It hurt them badly. Muncy moved into scoring position, and then here we are, and we all lost 4 hours of sleep because of it.
Okay, so I'm sorry to be doing, you know, we did half hour on Friday night when they won the World Series, which you might find superfluous. But I'm sorry. That Friday night was, I don't know if it was a classic or it was an epic. Again, I'm sure it's a mad dog on this. Like, it's a classic, it's not an epic. You know, he had this whole thing about there's a difference.
No, it's an epic, not a classic.
Or, whatever. It's an epic, not a classic. It's an epic because you have to talk about it. Because it was 7 hours and 20 minutes and went to 3:30 in the morning. And we all have our own personal story about passing out on the couch or making it up or staying up or shouting at the TV or Murray. Like, and that, you know, so it's like an all-timer in that regard. So, I mean, and there's just so much to unpack from it, so we're talking about it. It's still, the whole night, that's stupid.
It's ridiculous.
It ceases to become the sport. And so that's that. But I think we've pretty much gotten through everything. I think we've gotten through everything. Everything from last night, everything from Saturday, everything from Friday, the series. We will dabble into your thoughts. We've been very light on calls today. I mean, not that you're not there. You're, of course, there. But we just have so much to get to. Maybe we'll try and mix in some calls here as we go forward and go over some of the stuff that we started with. So, again, Felger and Maz to 5:30. We're right back after Murray's update again. Breaking news on the Patriots. Someone, guess who's already in trouble for the Patriots?
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ooh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub.
It's game four of this World Series, the Boston Red Sox, the Los Angeles Dodgers, with Boston leading 2-1. Two on, two out. Dodgers leading by four. High fly ball to right. Back at the wall. It is gone. Pinch It's up the middle. The Red Sox are going to take the lead. Holt scores. Boston on top 5-4.
And that's where you won the World Series. That's Saturday night's game four. What a comeback that was. So all that crap from Friday, all of it. I mean, like, really potential sort of all-time crap from Friday. And then you're down 4-0. 4-0 in the seventh inning to make it a 2-2 game. And boy, the thing feels totally differently there, doesn't it? And you come back. You put 9 on the board. That's why you won the championship right there.
I mean, huge, huge swing there again. You know, just you go from the final 6 innings of that game on Friday night to the, you know, first 6 the next day. And that little window there sure as hell looked like a 2-2 series. Okay. I mean, the Dodgers are right there.
Okay, we've gotten to everything that's on our list. We will get to your thoughts here. Again, I just beg you, please, I'm asking you nicely. No pleasantries, no personal messages. Just get to your thoughts on the series. In and out. A lot of people want to get on. Greg and Waltham, go ahead. Lead us off.
Hey, how you doing, boys? I hope you appreciate this story. Saturday night, I had to work a benefit show at the Orpheum. You know, the game's on them. So here it is, down 4-0. You know, I'm miserable. I'm at the Orpheum.
Greg?
To see Jackson Brown and Amy
Greg,
Rowe.
Thank you so much for the call. I really want to be as respectful as possible, but I'm telling you, that's exactly the thing we can't have.
So it's got to be about the game or the series?
Cam and Taunton. Go ahead, Cam.
Dombrowski, behind Price, is the guy who should be shaking his ass the most today, because everything he did this past calendar year worked. Between he got the Martinez-Stanton call exactly right, hired the perfect man. That team would run through a brick wall for Alex Cora, and his deadline additions, Pierce Eovaldi, huge in this series. He's getting a lot of crap, but he deserves to shake his ass in the face of everyone who's giving him crap today, because he nailed this past calendar
year. It's so true.
Absolutely.
It's so true, and I was on the wrong side of most every one of those, just for the record, if you want to hear that. I wanted Stanton over J.D. Martinez. I did not like the thought of a first-year rookie manager here in Boston. It wasn't a Cora commentary. It was really just really more about first-year rookie managers here. I didn't want Cora. I, like everybody else, thought Eovaldi was nothing, just a journeyman nothing. Steve Pierce, I didn't really know. I took Maz's word. Maz liked Pierce, so I took his word for it. I had no thought on Pierce either way. But of all the guys, maybe Dombrowski is the one who should be shaking his ass the most.
Yeah, look, I at the deadline, I was really critical of him for not picking up bullpen help. And I just thought, how do you have this kind of team with those kinds of relievers and not get bullpen help at the deadline? And they argued that that they needed Eovaldi more. And look, they were right. I mean, Eovaldi was able to fill two needs for them. He was a huge, huge, huge get. The one thing I just, you know, and we played a Dombrowski cut earlier, him saying, well, you know, we believed in Brazier. They said that all year long about everybody. Well, we believe in this guy. We believe in that guy. We believe in Thornburg. Thornburg can help us. You know, like Thornburg wasn't even on the playoff roster. You know, so I like the guys that were here, they were able to identify the right ones and, more importantly, put them in the right spots, because none of them got near that eighth inning.
We've got Steve in Burlington, Vermont. Hi, Steve.
It's obvious the crow you've been eating has been defeathered. Continue your mea culpa. It's great.
I heard crow and mea culpa. I didn't hear anything
else. He said continue the mea culpa. It's great. That's
okay.
What he said.
No problem. Yeah, we were wrong on most stuff with this team. Some more than others, and I'm not pointing at Maz. Maybe I am. But yes, we were wrong on most of stuff. Yes. But I would like to hear from you folks before the games, not after. That's the only thing I would say. Like, you believed in all of that? Because I didn't really hear that. I heard it from some people. I heard it from this guy, Alan in Florida. But I didn't hear it from a lot of you. At least Alan in Florida called it before the fact. Go ahead, Alan.
I did call it before the facts. And you want to know something? I mean, I just walked in. I turn on the television. I guess you guys, I know who Peter Gammons is. He was on the MLB Network yesterday. You know, I mean, he called this team one of the greatest teams in the history of baseball, along with Russo, along with Ken Rosenthal. And then I turn it on, and you guys are sitting there criticizing Kinsler and Nunes. They just won the World Series.
Yeah, we still got to do our show, Alan. Still got to do the. We still got to do the show. Still got to do the show.
You got to do the show. But no, everything should, one day in your lives, things should be positive. I mean, one day in your lives,
it's
it isn't
both.
That hard.
It's Christmas. Back and forth.
There was a historic World Series.
Yeah, there was stuff that went wrong. So we talk about the stuff that went right. We talk about the stuff that went wrong.
They won.
You care. You listen every day. You care a great deal.
Who went? If you know, when I was in college, the same one you went to, if I got a D and a grade, but the next time I got an A, I forgot about the D. Who cares what they did?
My dad didn't, so I guess we had different there. I don't know.
My,
the D.
No. My dad, believe me.
The D came up.
No, that part, I'm, you know, but I'm just saying, this is totally ridiculous. Who cares what Kinsler did right now? This team is historic. They just went, they beat a 100 team in Houston that no one could beat. They beat the Yankees that no one could beat. And they beat the great Dodgers. This is ridiculous. This is a great, 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 one of the great wins in the history of this city.
Sure. Great team, great year. I don't think anyone's disputing that. In fact, Maz.
So, Alan, I don't expect you to listen all 4 hours. We didn't spend a ton of time on game three. Okay? And the other thing is, I actually put money on Pierce to be the MVP of the series, which means I thought there was a decent chance the Red Sox could win it. So, and I'm not telling you I'm Nostradamus or anything of the like. I like the odds. They were good odds.
No, but in terms of greatness, Maz has this as the second best Red Sox team of his lifetime.
Yes.
So, that's high praise for Maz. He is 0-4 ahead of it, but he has this team ahead of 0-7, ahead of 13. And I don't know where you would put 86 or 78 or those kind of teams in
well,
there.
Well, they didn't win it, so down the list.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's, I think Maz would agree. It's one of the great Red Sox teams of all time, one of them.
I mean, and to me, it's what Alan said. It's the road. When again, they won 108 during the regular season. We all kissed it off and said, okay, fine, but now what? And they had to play the Yankees in the division series who had won 100 games, and they beat them. And they had to play Houston, the reigning world champions, that had won 103, and they beat them. And then they beat the Dodgers, and again, not one of those clubs beat the Red Sox more than once. They won one game each. That's it. 11-3 against those teams. It was, they were on a mission. They were on a mission all year, and they absolutely trucked everybody.
And Alan, I don't need to tell you. You listen to the show. You're a big fan of the show. It's not a fan show. So I'm interested in the compelling content, whether you won or lost. Friday was compelling content. I'm sorry. Whether you won or lost the thing. Billy in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Billy.
Hi, Felga. How you doing?
Go ahead, Billy.
Just a quick remark, and I'm sorry I don't know the answer to this, but who was the pitcher that came out even in the first series against the Yankees, and he turned the game around, and he did a good job, and then it seemed like everybody else in that bullpen followed suit? It's something that turned that bullpen around, that they all started pitching good. And I can't think of the guy's name, to be honest, from the Red Sox, but it was a big thing to me.
Okay, hold on. I think Murray's got...
Is it maybe when Brazier told Sanchez to get the hell back into the box? I mean, that did kind of feel like a weird turning point, because he wasn't great in that series, but after that, he was nails.
I mean, it might have been Brazier, yeah.
The guys they straightened out, I mean, Kelly and Kimbrel, really, and not that Kimbrel was perfect here. He gave up a home run the other night and whatnot. Kelly's on top of the list. I'm sorry. I mean, the guy was almost not on the roster.
He should have got MVP votes for how he played in this
series.
I
agree.
I mean, so whatever they did to straighten that fella out, and I think Kimbrel straightened out there for, again, not all the way, but he was a hot mess there for a couple of games, and then he put three or four together that were clean and sort of seemed like he had refound his control a little bit. Whatever buttons they were pushing there obviously worked on those guys.
I mean, they were able to get all the key guys they needed to contribute, however a little or greatly, whether it was Brazier, Barnes, Kimbrel, or Kelly. And obviously, they were able to go to the starters in the eighth inning.
We come back with perhaps the face of the victory, the face of the World Series championship. And what I think, again, is an all-time quote. You want to talk about the all-time great quotes in Boston sports history? The Fellowship of the Miserable from Rick Pitino. You know, wake Babe Ruth up, I'll drill him in the ass. The Yankees are my daddy. That's on there. For you old-timers, Dick Williams, I think we'll win as many as we lose, or whatever. What did he say in 67? Y'all repeat that one? I don't know. You give me a quote in Boston sports history, and I'll put this one right up against it. We'll do it right after this.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Saving all my postseason wins for the Red Sox. I know good things are going to happen to me in October, and that just hasn't been the case thus far.
I know how good he is. I trust the guy.
This isn't about me. You know, I understand the narratives. I get that. You know, I deserve those narratives, but this is bigger than David Price. This isn't about me. This is about the Boston Red Sox.
And a swing and a miss. It's his ninth strikeout for David Price.
Does pitching your team to the World Series sound like enough?
Not yet, no. Not for me. You know, not for the other guys in the clubhouse. You know, we got four more wins. That was very, very special. Absolutely, but we want more.
Oh, strikes out on three pitches.
Hodges.
Pumped for myself, pumped for all my teammates and coaches. For us to be two wins away and up 2-0 right now in the World Series, that's a good feeling.
You said in Game 4 of the ALCS, warming up in the bullpen, you found something. Since then, two brilliant performances. What has changed?
I have. Struck him out. Second time Machado has struck out. 0-2, back to Price. What a night. It's all David Price in Game 5.
This is why I came to Boston. You know, this is, I knew it was a tough place to play. I knew it was challenging with everything that's going to go on there. But I've been through a lot in 3 years since I've been here. But this is why I came.
The people who should be shaking their ass at us today. David Price is probably at the top of the list. I don't know. Dombrowski's a good one. Dombrowski's a good one. He was justified on most every move that he made. But David Price, obviously, that one too. And what a great line there in the middle of it. You know, the Ken Rosenthal question in the middle of his playoff run. What's changed? Quote, I have. Tremendous. And that was, like, I think part of his resurrection there, Maz, is that there was some acknowledgement there from him. Remember the one quote where he says, you know, I know the lines and they're justified. You know, there was a point there where he stopped blaming the media or stopped blaming the fans or stopped fighting the thing. And he just sort of accepted, I haven't won at this time of year. And so it's going to be what it's going to be when you don't perform at this time of year. That's going to be the commentary. And he sort of at one point felt like he accepted it. And that's the first step to solving a problem is admitting you have the problem, right?
No shit about it. Yeah, and again, that happened in the Houston series the night before he pitched the clinching game against the Astros. Then he came out and had two good games in the World Series. And in this one, and we, you know, we didn't touch on this part of it, I didn't think he looked great in the first inning. I mean, he didn't look as good as he did in the earlier game in the series or as he did against the Astros.
Could you blame him? He's been pitching every single night, whether it's on the mound or out in the bullpen, every night.
And so that's what I was worried about, that I thought, you know what, he left it in the pen. Like, it's just been, it's too much. He's throwing too much. He's getting up to warm every single night, for crying out loud. He should have been the MVP of the series. He really should have.
Should have been the MVP. And the heart, you know, and the balls and the fortitude that he showed, the sacrifice. Again, he was up, it felt like, every night. Whether he came into the game or not, he was out there every night ready to go.
And he wasn't half-assed in the bullpen either in those warm-up sessions.
That game on Friday, I trusted him more than Kimbrel in the ninth. I remember sitting there with you, Maz, at NBC Sports saying, give me the guy on the left, because Kimbrel continued to look shaky.
So to me, my lead thought today is the reason you won this in five was your will to win and your sacrifice to win, and you're doing everything that it took to win, and the Dodgers not. I thought that was the biggest gap in the series. I think if that intangible were equal, you still would have won. You would have won in six or seven because I think you're more talented than the Dodgers. But that gap is smaller than the gap in sacrifice. And where you had everyone ready to go every night and you had pitchers sacrificing themselves every night and an organization that gave them the green light to do so. Whether it's Porcello, Eovaldi, Price, Sale, your starters were ready to go out of the pen almost every night. You had Eovaldi throw 97 pitches in relief. Relief after pitching the previous two out of the pen. You had Sale up, who's not right, obviously, constantly out of the pen, and he pitches last night. So you had all these guys going every other night, ready to go every night. You'll play 7 hours and 20 minutes, and the next morning, the manager shows up to the park, and he's got texts from all those pitchers saying, we'll want to go again tonight. You were willing to do that, and the Dodgers weren't. The Dodgers weren't. Their best reliever, Pedro Baez, was unavailable for Game 4. Think of that. Their starter in Game 4 bagged out Rich Hill again. Rich Hill wanted out more than Roberts wanted him out. We talked about that earlier. I don't want to go back to that, but that's on Rich Hill. He wanted out of that game. And so that was a huge gap. Your will to win, your sacrifice to win. And it started with Eovaldi and Price. Price was out there every night, Maz.
I mean, it was amazing, really. Again, I don't know that I've ever seen a team with that many guys going after it the way they did. And so, you know, to me, I just go all the way back to the beginning. They were on a mission from day one. They did not relent. They went 17-2 to start the year. They won 108 games. They blew away the Yankees in August and left everyone in their wake with a month and a half to go. Then they get into the playoffs and they went 11-3 against the iron of baseball. Like, it's not, they didn't get any lambs on the way. I mean, say what you will about the Yankees and the flaws, But they were a pretty competitive team last October. They get their asses kicked. And the Astros series between guys jumping in the stands and spinning around and throwing people out at second base, they won in a multitude of ways. They got contributions from every freaking guy on the roster, and they were just relentless. They were not going to go home losers again.
Okay.
They were not going to do it.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati.